who's crunching their crunchy packets of crunchiness.
Well, I'm just feeding Emily Tug crackers.
Okay. Well, tell her to stop.
Emily, you're told to stop. Niall's giving out to you now.
This big
stir. Yeah, I know they're tasty, but we're going to have them later.
It's time for Let's Go Go. No, Russ, Let's Go Jojo.
Joku.
I'm so excited about Jojo that we'll start it again now. It's time for Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. So strap yourselves in as we meet the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
All right.
And me, Brian, who was almost said Anthony, but he's not here. He's at a LAN party.
A LAN party?
A LAN party.
Ah.
And if he's taking his computer around or he's borrowing somebody else's. I don't know. Don't know what they're playing. PC games, I imagine. But before that, and what we're going to talk about this week, let's go to the week in JoJo's news. Continuing our exciting news about part 4. Starts in April!
Woohoo! Just in time for Easter, as Jesus would intend.
Well, I was going to say Christmas has come early.
Or very, like, very late.
Not this Christmas, the Christmas after.
And they've announced, what else? They've announced the staff, which is generally the same staff, but a different, character designer.
Yeah. Promotional image there, they look a little bit different, a little less, like, chiseled, as we saw in Star Crusader style, more like the kind of the softer tone he was approaching, yes. In part 4.
Well, that's alright, because they changed for, Stardust as well, from, the first two arcs, and then the animation studio changed, or rather
the director's pretty much the same.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the same writer as well.
Wow.
Yeah, so I think it's pretty much just the character designer is the main change. I didn't go through everything, but anyway, they've also announced some actors. You've got Yuki Ono as Josuke, and I've not seen anything he's done.
Yeah, he's like the... The one there, I think it's the guy doing,
in Kuroko's Basketball, I think.
Well, maybe this is the show that'll make him, you know?
Well, no, I think he's in Kuroko's Basketball, so I think it's probably the show which is made. Yuki Kaji as Koichi, who we're currently hearing as Speed of Sound Sonic. Wataru Takagi as Okuyasu, who I'm currently hearing as Bellamy in One Piece.
Yeah.
Or as he's continually shouted at for like the past 2 months, Bellamy, stop fighting.
Yeah. And he's done a lot of Cash Close or the Conan.
Yes.
He's done, wow. It's like a good, like, one, I'd say a good fifth of his casting here, probably there.
But yeah, in One Piece, he's been basically been beaten up for at least 2 months at this point. Takahiro Sakurai as Rohan Kishibe, the author stand-in. And of course, we're currently hearing him as the voice of Osomatsu.
Yes.
And returning, we have Daisuke Ono as Jotaro Kujo.
Currently Jushibatsu.
Eventually we'll have all the Osomatsus and JoJo's just linked and it'll be the same show.
Quite possibly.
Well, Osomatsu is about 6 idiots trying to make it in the real world, much as Star Wars Crusaders was, so...
Yeah. Basically the same plot. They'll also get, you know, they'll get sued for that as well.
And in Osomatsu news, the third episode will be partly changed for streaming, DVD, and Blu-ray.
Yeah, so those edits I've seen were, instead of handing her what looks suspiciously like poop, it's like a pink thing or something.
Yeah.
Instead of a golden ball, it becomes like a baseball or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Cannot offend Anpan Man.
But like I said, One Punch Man is just fine. But I guess that's making One Punch Anpan Man look totally killer.
Yeah.
So, like,
it's not making him look bad. That's the difference. Yeah.
You wish he was, able to destroy an entire meteor with a single punch.
Yeah, so we'll be here with you Let's Go to April, and then we'll probably go back to being Let's Go JoJo after that point.
I mean, that's a little unfortunate, but new JoJo, so...
I know. We've got to dedicate all our time to it.
Yeah, well, maybe, like, there'll be, you know, it'll be the best thing to come out that season, everything else will be shit, because, you know, you just happen to have so many good things airing right now.
At which point, I wish it was airing in January in that case, because we may be struggling for this podcast come January.
Well, I guess we could always do the OVA, just to bite us over.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
Or look at some other old stuff.
Hmm.
Okay, let's talk anime. So, we've not talked about it so far, but let's talk DD Fist of the North Star Strawberry Flavor. So, I'm all caught up. Niles watched the first three episodes. How much have you watched, Dwayne?
Anything? I've watched none of it.
None of it. So, sit back and listen to us.
I'm going to enjoy.
Dwayne hopefully remembers what's happened because he's watched these three episodes more recently than I have. At this point, it's over a month now. So the first episode was I found a minor end of the century and the villain and his friends and whatever the strawberry flavour thing. Strawberry flavour does not even get its title on Crunchyroll each week.
Yeah, I just... Well, they don't really flash for any titles, they just, like, you know, cut straight to it.
Yes. So basically the format of this second season, as best I understand, is that... The first half of the episode tends to be Akitaro Daiichi storyboarding. And then a guy whose name isn't, he is on Anime News Network's thing, but not listed on this. Haruki Kasugamori is mainly doing the second half. In one episode they switch it over, and in another episode somebody else comes on and does one segment. And then at the very last, would you say 2 to 3 minutes?
Yeah, about 2 and a bit minutes, I think.
You get the strawberry flavour segment.
Mm.
And the DD Fist of the North Star, as best as I understand, is not adapted from the comic this time round. It's just stuff those two people are, Daichi and Kasugamori, are making up. And if you look on the credits, I believe there's no script writers.
Okay.
I think they're just doing it straight to storyboard.
Hmm.
Which you can kind of tell.
I'm getting that feeling now, because they do seem to kind of abandon, you know, even three episodes, kind of abandon the whole conceit of one saying, it's like DD Fist and Oster, but we're in school this time, and saying, no, we're going to go off on this other, like, story here that's not related to school or school life in the slightest.
Yeah, I'll save it. There's some, and it gets more and more meta as it goes along about sort of the nature of, they're quite clearly either doing this very quickly or not leaving themselves much time to do it or just not spending that much time on the animation side of things. Cause there is a considerable drop off in animation quality from the first season.
Yeah.
Which I found really hard to deal with, and yet here I am 7 episodes in, so I think I got used to the new style by the end.
No. Well, I think it picked up in the comedy sticks, you know, in the third episode that I just watched today, actually. And it wasn't really kind of getting me in the first two, but I said I'd just give it, like, you know, the 3-episode test anyway, and I really picked up around that point. But I've been watching, like, the strawberry flavored segment with South, or, you know, I also watch it. Because I have 2 minutes out of a day to watch those, and it's fine.
How are you finding those?
They're kind of up and down.
Yeah, that's my opinion as well. I'm not quite sure whether it would be better if they had more time, or whether it would be unbearable if they had more time. Because I'm not sure whether it's just not funny sometimes, or whether it's not funny because they haven't got enough time to be funny.
There was some kind of good actor. I was enjoying that thing where, like, the Star Trek keeps trying to ascend the pyramid to fight Kenshiro, but that kid keeps stabbing him in the leg. And it's like, you are my true greatest opponent, young boy. There's a turban who stabbed me in the leg with a nail. I could get out of that. Well, I think it was the most recent one at that time recording, was doing, like, the kind of idol interview thing. That was strange, I suppose.
Yeah, that seems to be leading into something next week when they'll perform their song.
Oh, I see.
I think that's what they said.
That's setting up for a long joke.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, they come back to that kid stabbing him in the leg multiple weeks as well.
Would this make, like, no sense to someone who hasn't seen Fist of the North Star?
I think so, yeah. I think it makes less sense than DD Fist of the North Star does.
Okay, right.
It's just nonsense.
Because DD Fist of the North Star has, like, built its own world and inhabited it with super deformed versions of the Fist of the North Star characters.
Right, right.
Whereas Strawberry Flavor seems to be referencing very specific scenes.
Okay. Well, maybe that's better that they keep the sections down then. Just for, like, people who are new to...
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's... You're still getting, you know, like, this is like, no, all these, like, his fists and Oscar are tough guys, but they're in these kind of... They're being kind of silly, and... Like, and you do things like that now, where, like, Sato has imprisoned Kenshiro after, like, cutting his clothes just so that you would normally guess, like, no, if you were a woman, there would be, like, no, kind of... very revealing now with a covered badge life. It's like he's got that, like, trapped in a dungeon and it's like, you know, when I'm much like Kenshiro, you know, so maybe, you know, he's being very coy, let's be friends, kind of looking over his shoulder at Kenshiro, all kind of blushing at this little girl. It's like, yes, this is what I came to see, but haven't really got anything on par with that now for a while.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And I'd say from the DD Fist of the North Star, the Haruki Kasugamori segments have been much better than the Akitara Daiichi segments until this week, and maybe last week as well. Even last week, Kasugamori's was better, and this week he didn't have a segment, it was only Daiichi. But Daiichi's segment this week was top notch, if I would say anything, because Niall watched that himself later. I think Daiichi's, it feels a lot like, I can't remember what it's called, but he did some YouTube shorts, I think last year or the year before, about this ninja character. And it feels a lot like that in the delivery, but with much more reaction from Bat. So when we've talked about it on Dynamite in the Brain, Bradley was not a fan of Bat overreacting in the first series. He would definitely not like Bat in this series.
Yeah, I was noticing that now in this. Now, like maybe my memory is failing me, but in this series now, he seems to be like really intensely. I know he's supposed to be the straight man reacting to these idiots, but it's going a little too far sometimes, where it's kind of irritating. Where he is, you know. He can react to what he's saying, oh, you idiots, what are you doing? But he is literally just explaining the punchline. It's a very obvious visual gag, and I feel like some of those guys would work a lot better if he just didn't do anything, you know?
In the bike, the one where they take the bike rides, don't they take him along because they say they need him to react to things? Because I think he's arguing why he has to go, and that's... But yeah, he's much more, he does it a lot more in Daiichi's segments than the other segments. I've noticed the Kasugamori's segments are a lot stranger. I think that really starts with the Clock Towers elevator one, and they just get stranger and stranger. The episode where Raoul writes the school song, I think, is my favourite so far, which you'll be getting to later.
Yeah, the bit I liked the most was, like, so far was this. Toki and his black market business.
Yes.
He's finding out that money can be paid for goods and services.
Yeah, and he always charges people a pun. The numbers work out some sort of pun, which insults his brothers normally.
Yes. Yeah. And relentless ribbing of Yo-Kai Watch.
Yes.
The old guy watch, and also the... It's not Jibanyan, it's something else in there.
It's Jibai Sekinyan.
You can do its own character.
Yes, because adding the Seki bit, which obviously is century reference to Fist of the North Star, into his name, turns the front part of his name into the reference to, I assume, whatever is the equivalent of Japanese MOT for Grotax or something along those lines. So... Somebody kindly explained that joke to me on Twitter, and now I fully understand, because he says it pretty much every time after the first appearance.
Do they have to, like, write that into the subtitles, or do they, like,
no, they don't explain that joke in the subtitles, they just do
okay.
it.
Ea says it. It's like, hello, I'm a different second here, and I can do my own car insurance.
Yes.
Which must have seemed random as fuck initially.
Yeah, well, they were hunting down ghosts at the time, and they did find a ghost.
Yes.
They were talking, okay, he's a ghost, but it was the wrong ghost, so.
Yes.
How would you even translate that? Would it be Japan businessman or something? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how it
works. Yeah, it's an odd one.
Japan insurance?
Well, no. I think it's just, you just leave the Seki thing in there, because... Mm. The sound matches however often they say Seki and everywhere else.
Yeah.
In the show. But yes, he makes very frequent appearances. He's obviously definitely not Jim and Yarn because he's got different shaped tail. And of course, if anyone was going to complain, then Fist of the Little Star could complain to Yokai Watch first, so.
Yeah, is this them just trying to bait them or what? You know, it's just try and sue us, motherfuckers.
No, I think that it's not a mean-spirited mocking of him.
Oh, no.
He's just in there because he is the modern Fist of the North Star reference, so it would be foolish not to reference him back.
Okay.
and it gets very strange later on. So the latest episode has some ridiculous stuff about... the idea of anime adaptations and how they relate to manga and how the characters inside the anime adaptation might relate to it.
Hmm.
So as I say, it gets stranger and stranger from what seems like just the previous series set in the school, but with worse animation. It kind of loosens up and kind of goes bonkers, but not as bonkers as our next topic, Mr. Osomatsu. We have three stories this week. Todomatsu and the Five Demons, Four, and Going North. And there's another segment on the end which didn't get into the title on Crunchyroll.
Oh, really?
Oh. Yeah. There was a post-credits thing. You didn't watch post-credits thing, did you, Dwayne?
I don't know if I did. I'm trying to remember now.
You've done an Anthony Annas now.
I generally watch the end credits thing. You're saying it was cut from the stream?
It just didn't have a title in the film, the Crunchyroll title.
Oh, okay. Right. No, I probably saw it then.
It's the bit where Osomatsu's getting counseling from Dion.
Oh, yeah. Dion's just sitting there fucking not saying his catchphrase for once. Yeah,
complaining that people calling this anime a gag anime is setting too high a standard.
Yeah, if we just put it on them.
Yes.
You know?
It's the viewer's responsibility to find it funny.
It's like, listen, if you don't find this funny, that's your motherfucking fault. Yeah.
But, you know, there wasn't much chance of us not finding it for this week, I don't think. Particularly the first segment, Todomatsu and the Five Demons, a section so funny it has spawned its own meme.
It's pretty fucking good. I mean, that face, memes. I mean, like, I'd already seen it doing the rounds on Twitter, unfortunately, before I saw it. But, it still made me laugh when I saw it, because it's fucking perfect.
So the gist of this episode is that Todomatsu has found a job at Starbucks.
Yeah.
It's not Starbucks. It's Tsutaba.
It's Starbucks.
Yeah, we are.
And everything's going swingingly. He's getting invited to a mixer by his work colleagues.
They don't have enough boys at the mixer. Oh, my God. Yeah, he's freaking out on that.
And who would turn up to ruin this but all five of his brothers?
And they all clearly haven't been in the same place.
No. But I love how they all roll up and they're like, oh, clears the slack jaw joke. And it's like, wow, this is one of their modern cafes, huh?
It was pretty great.
And this culminates in them all calling him Totty repeatedly, which is the other part of the meme, as well as this facial expression he pulls at one point during the episode.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that one doing the rounds as much. Yeah, turning the cute name the cute girls were calling him into just was like, hey Totty, where are you going, Totty? You gonna take us, Totty? Gonna invite us, Totty? Yeah. Yeah, if you have siblings, you probably are familiar with some of this.
Yeah, I think not just siblings, just family members.
Yeah, I guess just family in general.
Ruining the illusion of the personality you created in front of your colleagues or your friends who don't know your family.
Oh, dear. yeah, this one was pretty great. When they start freaking out as well, it's the one time all their faces change into something completely unlike the general Osamatsu face. Yeah, you know, when they're all flailing about on the floor for no good reason. Yeah,
they just go berserk. they're making a scene, like, you know, they're like, spilling the coffee everywhere in their mouths, you know, and being rowdy and rambunctious. And then one of them, I think it was Ichimatsu, who's up on a table squatting down with pants down, about to take a dump on it. It's like, whoa, easy there. It's an escalation.
I also like them giving him, giving them the worst table, like a table like right in front of the toilets that would actually obstruct people going in and out. I was like, man, that table does suck. but they could not take the hint.
Mm.
Yeah, that was a pretty funny one.
And then we get a short segment called Four, which is all about how four is the worst number in the world for sextuplets. Because it's the hardest thing to divide between six. So they've got four, is it, what sort of like, sweet it is?
Oh, yeah. It's like cream-filled buns or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Like sweet buns, I don't know the proper name.
Yes, and so they're having to decide how they're going to divide it up. And apparently they've been staring at each other for 36 hours.
Yeah, they're all kind of like drooping off. It's like, don't fall asleep, man, or I'll eat your bun. Yeah, that was pretty great. I was like, well, you have solutions to this, so just divide three of them in half, and then, like, you know, what was the thing they said? They do Janken or whatever to get the last one?
Yeah, in the end they decide to give the fourth one to one of their parents.
Yeah.
And then they cut the other three in half, and they discover that they've got different fillings in. There's two of one type of filling and one of the other, so they're back to square one.
Yeah.
I do like the violence in that scene where your man gets like smacked out the window and then that kind of remains broken for the rest of the scene.
Yeah.
That's good.
And then finally we get the very different.
Oh my God.
Going north. Where Decapan and Dion are heading to Canada to see the Aurora Borealis.
Apparently, I wasn't entirely, I was like, was this what they came here for? Because it didn't really make it clear at all.
But no, it starts off as an easy ride, apparently.
Yeah. So they've got a map and it says America and it's got a few like lines. It's like turn right at America to get to Canada or something.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I think they'd be turning left because they're coming from Japan. But anyway.
That's bad map that got sold, isn't it?
And it's mostly done through them just making their usual nonsense noises.
So, Decapan just goes, oui, oui. That's just his noises.
Oui, 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 oui.
And is it Dacon or Dapon?
Dion.
Sorry, I forgot his name.
Dion!
You'll be hearing a lot of that, yeah. And there are many adventures. I think my favorite bit in this was what led them to this point, that very quick flashback.
Yeah. Yes.
That was fucking amazing. Because I was like, whoa, I want to see some of those things happen.
They've had many adventures together. They've arrived at this point.
It's very, I guess, kind of slapsticky, you know, kind of Mr. Bean. Just they don't understand how humans work somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Bean was particularly well, I thought, because obviously that first movie involved him going to America as well.
Mm.
They're just so thick.
Mm-hmm. they get stuck like you know, they crash their bikes, or the bikes get crashed into, so they get stuck hitchhiking, and then there's a really, really long Steve McQueen style take of them just like on the side of the road with the sign trying to hitch for a lift.
You're just waiting for something to happen.
It's like a good minute and a half, I think, of them just
it waiting. Felt like longer. Yeah. I think that was the point, though. Mm. I also like the one person who stopped for him. She's like, yeah. Put your bags in the bag.
Of course, after they've stripped naked.
Because they figure, oh, sexy people get picked up. All right. It's like, no, you're not, you guys. Yeah, but, after that they're just walking, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, and then they get into a fight.
In the woods, yeah.
Yes, between each other. Yep. After Decapan shoves Dion and then realizes his mistake, and then we don't see the fight, we just see that Decapan has been beaten bloody by Dion.
He's like, I'm so sorry.
But nice, good stuff, as usual.
It's good, isn't it? It's kind of see that the focus shift to some other characters as well. It's kind of like what they did last week with the Iami episode.
What
are these guys up to this week?
Randomness, but I do like the not only the shift in characters, but the complete shift in kind of theme and structure and everything.
Yeah,
because it's very much so a point from A to B, but you don't know why or. Nobody is actually saying anything. It's a fucking silent movie here.
Yeah, that's one thing I've really enjoyed. It's like you've got the animation bit of Space Dandy happening over in One Punch Man, and you've got like the genre jumping, style jumping,
right,
going on in the show. It feels a good time to be watching anime. Yes. And then you get that final punchline after the, thing with him saying, as we said, this isn't a gag anime. It's anime. Is it called anime at your own responsibility? I think they call it. Yes.
Up to you to laugh at this. If you find out money, laugh at it. If you don't, then just watch it. It's whatever you want it to be.
that was nearly like, if you didn't find that last segment funny and really fucking different from our usual tone, that's your fucking fault. And then you're making excuses for itself.
Talking of laughing, let's move on to Concrete Revolutio. Episode 6, They Are Always Laughing.
Again, a massive tone shift.
Yes. Okay. After talking about superheroes and kaiju and ghosts and all that jazz, let's now talk about pop music.
Everyone loves pop music.
They do. And in this episode, they're called Mountain Horse, aren't they?
Yeah,
the Mountain Horses, I think.
Yes, and we follow the career over 3 years, 66, 67, and 69, of this band, Mountain Horse.
Yeah.
And they're basically a stand-in, I think, mainly for the band The Drifters.
Well, see, I looked into that, right? And it wasn't just those guys, because the Monkees were in 1965. I think, I'm not sure if their show was 66 or 65.
But no, it's very much specifically the Drifters, because the Drifters supported the Beatles at Budokan.
I was also thinking, was it Hanna-Barbera's The Impossibles? Because that was in 1966.
That as well. What powers did they have?
It was the same fucking year, man.
One turned into water.
Yeah.
One could make multiple copies of himself, and one was a spring.
Yeah, he was your man off One Piece. He could make his arms and legs springs.
Bellamy.
Bellamy!
I was thinking, shit, are they trying to take off that? Because, I mean, like, I guess those things were taken off the general kind of Beatles mania, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very specifically the Drifters. And apparently, if you go to that French Toast site I mentioned before...
Oh, yeah, I've seen the pictures.
There's another comedy jazz guy who did the hand thing that the guy with the telekinesis... in this episode does.
Yeah.
Who is in a different band. But yeah, it's very much the Drifters. So this band was supporting a band who we are to take as the Beatles. because there is a huge band playing the Budokan in 1966.
Yeah, it's probably them.
Yes. And between this and, the Easy Rider thing in Mr. Osomatsu, it made me realize, man, Jill Pet Sunshine is a truly special program which ruined musical references for everybody else. Because when they did a Beatles reference, they actually had the Beatles on the soundtrack. Yeah. And when they did an Easy Rider parody, they actually had Born to be Wild on the soundtrack. I still don't understand how they got so many songs on that soundtrack for some show selling toy animals. The third series of a show selling toy animals, no less.
And they must sell a lot of toy animals to get the rights to the music, don't they?
Yeah, but it's only that series.
Licensing thing.
None of the other six.
Like if it was through Sony or something like that, and, you know.
Yeah, or they just did it without asking permission.
That's entirely possible.
Yeah, because this would have... I mean, it's pretty good, but it would be worked so much better if we actually had Beatles music during the concert scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it turns out, in the Concrete Revolutio universe, the Beatles have superpowers.
They have the superpowers to make you feel at ease and be connected with all of humanity and the guy fighting in Vietnam and that kind of thing.
Liberate the human soul.
Yeah, it's like a super empathy, but actually imposing empathy on other people.
I thought that was really interesting. I would watch a show just about that. Just about magical musicians. That's basically how a lot of the Concrete Revolution is anyway. I'd watch a show about any one of these things you're talking about.
And, so Jiro's there with Emmy. And the power works on him, but not on her, because apparently it doesn't work on yokai. But supporting them was the Drifters, and also Drifters Mountain Horse.
Oh yeah, they were just the opening act.
Yes, they were opening act, and Jiro was not happy to see them. He was like, why isn't the band I've come to see on? when they walk off stage, they bump into the Beatles, and apparently, the Beatles, just coming into contact with Beatles, has given them superpowers.
Yeah. So
they're like radioactive or something.
Something like that, yes.
Atomic Superman.
Later on they're saying we gotta negate all the Beatles going around and people listening to the Beatles music and randomly getting superpowers. So I guess, yeah, actually meeting them in a corridor would...
Yeah, because they accidentally bump into one of them. And... yeah, and so they get kind of crappy superpowers.
I mean, like, they're okay, but they're not what we've seen so far.
Yeah, well, the one guy, you know, he can make lightning, but it's not very high voltage, so it'll just kind of get, you know, if you get hit by it, it'll kind of, you know, give it a little kind of a tingling feeling, and it might kind of, like, unknot your shoulders for you if you're feeling very tense up there.
I mean, like, that's useful, but not really, you know.
Yeah. Or the other guy, he can turn the skin into metal like Colossus, but then he can't move.
I knew that was going to be the case, but the reveal of that is pretty great.
Is it metal or rock?
I think it was metal because he looked kind of shiny.
Yeah, because I thought it was rock. Because I thought when he gets crushed, I thought that was why he got crushed.
See, I thought he was only metal on the outside because he could still talk like this.
Could be.
Through his teeth kind of thing.
Yeah, and so that's D, and then the leader of the band is Don, who's got a phasing power.
That's actually a good power.
But yeah, he works when he says...
excuse me for a bit.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
When he excuses himself, he can move through the wall.
And then the fourth one's got sort of telekinesis, but only can push and pull things.
Yeah, towards himself or away from himself, I think. Yeah.
And so they think they got these superpowers, so they get this great idea that, oh, we'll go out and do good with these. So they head out, run into some people robbing a place.
Yeah, it's straight away. It's like, hey, maybe we could be superheroes. And then there's a bunch of criminals, like, you know, robbing a place.
And completely fail in their attempt to stop them with their superpowers.
Yeah, they nearly concussed themselves, like, with the metal guy.
Thank God, Gigantor 7 were there to save the day.
Yes.
Yeah, I did. Your man Jaguar as well was kind of like looking at him. Was like, these guys ain't even going to be a problem.
You know, it's just like, God, I'm going to waste the bureau's time and money on these dudes.
Oh, that's pretty harsh.
And we're also seeing at this point a flash forward to 69, where they're playing a club, and Jiro is on the run. I think it's the earliest we've seen him on the run.
Yeah, he's
not wearing his scarf yet.
Oh, he's wearing a coat. That's right. I didn't actually pick up on that. I noticed the coat, all right, but I didn't pick up on that scarf. Mm.
And your kid ghost fella's chasing after him.
Well, he's chasing after him, but he doesn't seem to be... He's not actively after him yet. He's kind of letting him off for the most part. Yeah.
And we learned that he also has a connection to Mountain Horse because he was sent to infiltrate the record company they were with in 1967.
Yeah, he was a gopher for them earlier on. Mm. Mm. Apparently he can become an older teenage version of himself.
Yes.
Because he looked a bit older in that one. And he wasn't wearing the silly...
I think it's just the way he was dressed. I think...
Yeah, maybe that was it.
I think that's just the way he's dressed.
I thought he was trying to do an older kind of voice as well, but... Okay.
Yeah, it turns out this record company are working with the Imperial Ad Agency, who is the ad agency from the previous episode.
Yeah.
Who were trying to create a pacifist kaiju. And they've put together a government-approved superhero band.
Oh, bloody hell, I've forgotten the names of them now.
Yeah, I forgot the names.
Angel Stars!
That's it. And Don accidentally learns, after he accidentally phases into the boss's chair when he's getting ready to give his resignation letter, that they're going to use this band to trick children into eating a chocolate which is laced with a drug which gets rid of superpowers.
What was, is that related to anything? Because I could not figure that out.
Well, because they don't, they sort of hint at things like the Beatles are causing people to develop superpowers.
All this love and peace. Yeah.
It's basically equating superpowers with the student protests and
Yeah, it's another way to write it in. But I thought that was really unusual because they seem to be, I guess they've got an anti-superhero agenda.
Yes. And we see a glimpse of that guy we were told was around before the war. And we get another reference to before the war when Don's talking with the rest of the band and he's apparently old enough to remember before the war and apparently superheroes weren't covered up before the war.
Yeah. So it's kind of curious how that went down.
Yeah.
I assume they'll eventually cut back to World War II where there are superheroes just whizzing about the whole time.
Yeah. He's equating them, in this day and age, they're kept under wraps because they've been used by various militaries as just WMDs, So.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a. At the government, they want superheroes, but only if they can control them using from their own ends. You can't be just walking around using your powers to do good in the world or anything like that.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that you've kind of got two lots of the man, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got the Bureau who are trying to promote superheroes, it appears.
Trying to promote them, but also trying to promote them in the public eye, but not make them public. It's this weird kind of thing they have.
I think they say something they're trying, because they were arranging the kaiju attacks, weren't they?
Yeah, that's right. They were doing that kind of under the table to actually bring the superhero popularity up because that superhero who stopped the giant monster. I like that guy.
To give them which would hopefully build up so they could make them public, but they still want to control them for their own purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Where you've got this other faction, this Imperial Ad Agency, which seems odd. I assume they must be working for somebody else, or that's a front for something else.
Yeah, I can't figure out what...
Who are trying to get rid of superheroes entirely.
See, my guess is that something happened in the Second World War that superheroes committed some war atrocities, which is why the Bureau is trying to secretly bring up their popularity, so people will like them again, because apparently maybe people were scared of them at the time, because, like you say, weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, and obviously that name, Imperial Ad Agency, is loaded.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then you've also got this discussion with the band about how they're about to give up because they think they're like second rate, maybe even like they're not a great band, they're not great superheroes, but they kind of realize, Don sort of realizes that that's not something to be ashamed of.
Like that. That's like an anti-fucking shonen message. Yeah. You know, it's like, I'm going to be the very best at the thing I do. It's like, we don't have to be the best. We can just be reasonably good at what we do.
Yes. so that's not but selling out your principles.
They
try and bribe them out of helping the Bureau take down this poison chocolate plan.
Yeah, it's like they offer them, it was either opening or an album or something.
Yeah, they to do the theme tune to whatever
their
world of the Osaka Expo.
Yeah, which obviously would have sold a lot.
10 million copies.
Yes. My God. You'll be famous overnight.
I assume we must be getting a Osaka Expo episode at some point.
Oh, yeah, that's fucking happening. Come on. All the fucking big events.
The time frame of that, that's been just like... ripe for story ideas, like one 20th Century Boys and one had as well.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the main fucking.
There's a whole thing about that, the conspiracies abound in that, and this is a show definitely about conspiracies and the like.
And so they decide to take care of business themselves. They're gonna do one bit of super heroics and take care of this problem.
One last job.
They break into the chocolate factory. And they manage to take care of things, but at the cost of Dee's life when he gets crushed by a rampaging giant robot little boy.
It's the mascot of the chocolate company. Where he's like, yes. Little boy eating chocolate. It's like, oh, but then it's like, you know, very like a very cartoony little like.
Yeah, a kid with a handful of he's just got a handful of candy, I guess.
Yeah, and they got a big statue that. Well, naturally, you know that's a Brockman's life. That's attacking them. So
when they walked by that, you knew that was going to come alive, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah, you just knew.
That's just obvious.
Yeah, and the advertising executive and the
now evil band.
Apparently, yes. Yeah, I like the fact that she's still distraught that they accidentally killed.
See, she was the same way when the guys were enraging Megagon.
She's probably going like, "Damn, this is going to mean a lot more paperwork for me."
Yeah, I'm kind of curious as to where her loyalties lie, and also what that freaking advertising bureau is actually trying to do.
Yes.
Besides the anti-hero thing, I don't get where they're coming from. Especially now that they're promoting a hero band. Presumably, maybe the band will become supervillains, and that will de-promote people with powers. I don't know. It's another one.
So the other, I think they mentioned Plax Pharma is the people who developed the drug they're sticking in the chocolate.
Mm.
And it was Sugimoto Productions was the record company.
Yeah.
And she's gets the name Miss Tozaki. In this episode.
Okay.
And then back in 69, we learned that Jiro is basically trying to recruit other superheroes, superhumans.
Yeah.
And take down the bureau.
Or something else. Who knows exactly?
It's to take down
That's
you
true.
Guys.
But
which would imply, you know, the bureau, but it could mean that, you know, whoever's pulling the strings in this whole thing.
Superhero agenda, the man.
Yes. And so, but they're quite happy just to continue to get laughs, which they get by stealing his coat with telekinesis.
That was nice. It's nice to see Jiro kind of human, you know? Just like, well, yeah, you could totally like trip him up and shit. He's still a guy. I did like the band kind of coming together for the one thing, the one superhero mission they managed to get off. Cause, you know, pulling your man through the robot. The metal dude, and I was like, oh man, that was sweet. But you know he's gonna die, because every time they cut to the future of
he's not there.
After that, he's not there. And I was like, well, I don't think he left the band, because these guys seem on really good terms. and then when they're walking off, it's like one guy, hey, where's the other guy? And it's like, oh, he's dead.
I see.
Yeah, and it's just like, and some of their suggestions suggest that in 69, that superhumans are like completely outlawed.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, anytime they're doing their comedy bit on stage in Japan, Moulin Rouge, I don't know what the deal was with that. They were just like, oh, we're not superpowers. It's just special effects for a laugh, you guys.
Wink, wink. Obviously, the audience know, but they're on it as well.
It's more so the audience are just fucking with them, yeah.
Yeah. And we obviously still not seen 1968 yet, so I assume whatever turns Jiro is possibly happening that year.
Yeah.
And of course, the big pop culture thing from 1968 is the launch of Shonen Jump.
That is very interesting.
And then the subsequent raging against Go Nagai by the Parents Teacher Association.
So you think we're going to get a Galgo?
Go Nagai. We won't go Galgo, no.
Oh, sorry.
That's the Kao Saito.
Yes.
Sorry, I don't know.
Shameless School is the thing which. So, yeah, I always think, I kind of half expect that to be representative of the Switch.
Mm, okay.
I'm glad we got British superheroes. I wasn't expecting the Beatles. I was expecting something like the Thunderbirds or something. But in this universe, the version of the Thunderbirds may actually just be intelligent puppets which rescue people.
Yeah, you can't fucking tell, man. It might be, they might all get into Thomas the Tank Engines at this rate. Anything can happen.
The other thing I noticed in the end credits is, you know, right at the end when you've got like the cast picture all together.
Yeah.
And the frame sort of gets smaller.
Oh, it covers the camera's pulling back and they're like pulling through a window or something like that.
So the window frame covers up, the old guy who's got the gas which comes out his mouth.
Yeah.
And then he's not in the cast photo of the time jump, the 1970s version of everybody.
That's fucking interesting. I didn't spot that. I know they all change, like they all get older. And
yeah, it's like Jiro's no longer in the window. He's outside the window.
Yeah, and the kid is wearing his darker uniform.
Yeah, his jumpsuit.
Yeah. And obviously the robot detective is outside the window as well.
With his dyed hair.
Yep.
Yeah, so he's gone.
That's interesting.
I don't think we've seen him in the flash forwards.
Yeah, we haven't actually in any of the stuff from the 70s and whatnot.
And next week, Earth-chan episode.
Excellent. I like Astro Boy, so that should be good.
Yeah, just make sure you watch after the end credits on that. I do know, because there's an important scene after the end credits which people missed.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I usually just keep an eye on it, like, up on the end. This seems like a little bit long before, like, the end credits end of the next episode preview. I better stick around for this.
Well, I tend to just watch the end credits because, I mean, like, most of the shows we're watching, I actually like the outro themes, so they're pretty great. Also, you know, I mean, like, One Punch Man, you have to, because you know for a fact something's going to happen.
You get extra scene and then you get a comedy preview from.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to miss out on that.
Okay, and then we just move on to, that's a good segue, to One Punch Man. The Supreme Pupil. So I'll let somebody else explain this episode.
After you know. If you don't mind.
After me.
I'll do it, but I don't mind.
Okay, well, there's a crisis. A crisis is happening. And you know, it's like gets a call from Hero Association. Got all hands on deck on this mother right here. Mm. It turns out a meteor is coming, like, well, it's coming out from space. It's going to, like, crash into City Z and destroy it. And it's like, well, geez, that's right. I'll break it down there. So heads on down to where, you know, the rendezvous point is. And there's only one other hero there. It's like the old Kung Fu master, Bang, the Silver Fang. And it's like, hey, where's everybody else gone to? Where's all the other heroes? No, it's just you and me, kid. All the other heroes, you know, either too far away or they just don't give a damn about cities that, you know, they're too good for this thing. So it's up to you and me trying to avert this horrible catastrophe. Oh, dear. So, gee, it's like, oh, yeah, well, that will have a fight. Trying to break out the new upgrade. So he's brought his briefcase, which contains, like, you know, his new, more powered-up cyborg arms, which have bigger guns in them.
Why did he just wear the arms out initially? I didn't quite get that. It's just like, I'm gonna carry my arms in my arms in a suitcase.
It's cooler to carry. You come with me. It's got a suitcase in the air and a rocket forward and jets, and you can, like, dock mid-air like a super robot.
Oh, it's cooler. It was very cool. I've no doubt of that.
Yeah. But another hero does turn up. It is the... I forget his
Iron
name.
Iron Knight or something? Steel Knight?
Metal Knight. Boffoy, the Metal Knight. Don't call him Boffoy.
That's his regular name.
Yes.
Yeah. He was kind of like, oh, okay, another hero's going to help him out. And he, Steel Knight, is more... Oh, well, actually, there's more here to test out my brand new weapon, and, you know, see if we can take out this meteor, right? And then, well, geez, well, you better hope so, otherwise you're going to be all destroyed as well. And saying, no, I'll be fine. You won't, because this is just actually like a robot drone body. I sent ahead to test this thing out. So, okay, I'll let you off with that. So he fires off his weapon is like, you know, a bunch of missiles and stuff like that. All it does is just really just kind of slams into the mirror, doesn't get kind of slow down a bit. So then he gets out of there, and she was like, hey, it's up to me. I got one, give it my all like that. Well, Bang, your master was saying, okay, if you're gonna like do this, man, you got one, give it your all. I forget what exact advice was, but.
His thing was like, don't kind of like your own self doubt. It was something like your own doubt is kind of getting you. What you need to be is kind of like just carefree and just kind of go for it. And then the beautiful image of his sensei.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Speed, but just like master. Maybe that's why he's so strong. So he like, he was geared up to fire up his big beam in it, but like, he thinks that, no, I'm going to, like, you know, like, release my kind of power core from the main unit of my body and plug it into my arm to give it all that juice I got. And he fires, like,
he plugs his heart into his bicep. That's amazing.
That's giving it your all. Certainly. And he fires a massive beam, massive ray altogether. And even Bang is impressed. Wow, you're actually, from what I can see from here, it's actually starting to slow down right now. Maybe this kid can do it. But gives it his all, runs out of juice, and the meteor is still coming down. So he thinks, oh no, I try my best, but it's boned. I'm boned. We're all in and everybody down. But luckily, like, you know, little pat on the shoulder. So, say, thanks, you know, so I'll take it from here. And it's Saitama, he's right here. And he at least leaps up. He just shoots up off the meter and is like, no way in hell you're gonna destroy my town. You're not gonna destroy my city where I live. And he punches this and he smashes the meteorite into, like 100 pieces. However, it's, while the impact of it, you know, if it hit, like, the shockwave will destroy the city with a force of like a multi-megaton, like, nuclear weapon. He shares into 100 pieces now, but now those bits are still falling quite a high speed across town. This kind of like a shotgun effect. If you've seen the film Armageddon, you know, they may have explained that, where if this blew it all conventionally, it was turned into more pieces and just scattered across the earth. So this town is like mostly destroyed, but not as, you know, like wiped out of existence as it would have if the meteor had hit and the whole thing.
Yeah, somehow nobody died.
Yes, it was a miracle.
Well, they do have sort of bunkers for people to evacuate
into. That's true, yeah. Yeah. Like, everyone got evacuated, so it was only buildings and destroyed and fires and property. It was all property damage, pretty much.
No. You think, all right, like, Saitama, will he be like, should we get mighty praise for this? And he kind of does. And of course, the heroes on scene, like Genos and Silver Fang, they go up a rank, and they go up one rank in the S rank thing. And then, like, Saitama shoots them, like, where was he? 200 and something to, like,
fifth, I think, yeah.
Top five, anyway. It's like, wow, good job. However, this has caught the ire of some other heroes.
But Genos does also point out that if he had also destroyed part of the city,
he would have gone into S class.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
He would have at least, I mean, like, he would have at least went into A class, like, just jumped straight past B, but it's like, yeah, he like, blew up a lot of things, so.
Yeah. But nonetheless, Saitama has caught the ire of two heroes who, I think both of them are C classes also, probably.
No, I think he says they're B classes.
Yeah. Silver Fang says the B class. He says that's why these guys will never get out of B class.
Two shitty dudes, you have the return of Tank Top Tiger and his comrade, Tank Top Black Hole, who has both of them harnessing the power of the tank top for heroic ends. Well, I think that Saitama, you know, you're some kind of fraud. You're just out there taking credit for what other heroes have done, trying to, like, cheat your way out the rankings. And so Saitama's like, okay, well, you guys want to fight? No, we're not going to fight you. We're not going to fun do that out here. We're going to show you up for the fun fraud you are. And basically, you start shouting. It's like, hey, everybody, look, it's this Saitama guy. He fun smashing meteor and wrecked the whole town. He doesn't give a damn about you. And, you know, they're just, like, shouting at the crowd.
And everyone just wander around the rubble looking at their former shattered lives.
Yes.
And they're just, you know, just like, I guess we'll wander over here and see what's going on. And they're like, that's the motherfucker? That's the motherfucker? Yeah, they actually start riling up the crowd. Only a couple of them, mind you.
Yeah. And the two guys are going for, yes, yes, how does it feel? You know, you're hated now in the eyes of the people. Now they won't trust you. They won't ever like you. And now you'll never be able to go up any more than records anymore. And then Saitama was like, okay, all you motherfuckers, shut up right now. I'm being a hero on my own terms, okay? If it wasn't for me, you'd all be fucking dead, okay? So if you've got a problem with that, don't come over and say it to my face. I don't give a shit about any of you guys.
Dear.
Which is not the reaction the two guys were expecting, all things being said.
They're expecting to break him, not for him to get mad at the crowd for getting mad at him.
Yeah, you see, like, sort of, he's becoming, like, more and more withdrawn. You're getting kind of, like, a shadow on his brow, like, where you can't see his expression through his guy, and just his countenance has gotten very dark, and you think, oh, yes, we're getting to him now. But he's just getting madder and madder at the crowd, and we're just giving him shtick, even though he did indeed save all their lives. And then these two dudes try to have a go at him. It's like, okay, bro.
I think you got that in the wrong order. I think they have a go at him first before he makes that speech.
Well, yeah, I think they might do, yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
is when they have a go at him, they're just kind of like, oh, watch out. He's trying to fight everyone. And everyone in the crowd is like, what? No, he's not. He's just standing there. Because he's still just standing there, just going like,
Yeah, because Tank Top Tiger goes to punch him and gets one punched. And then Black Hole just basically gets put in a finger lock.
Yeah.
and so Saitama does that speech.
I didn't realize Black Hole was so big until he was getting his hand crushed. I didn't realize he was like Fist of the North Star proportions, you know? But then Saitama gives the speech because after he's crushed his hand, he's like, you crushed my hand. Seriously, I give up. I'm sorry.
And Saitama's like, what? Yeah, he just can't believe that that's hurting him.
Wait, so over there, yes, I've got over 3,000 PSI. I'll crush you like in the dust in my hands right now. And I forget what happened then.
Genos comes along and they walk off.
They go.
Genos is actually really impressed because he's just like, oh man, you're here on your own terms. I'm going to follow you no matter what.
Yes.
Yeah. And Bang is watching from the group class of the safe one saying, hey, that kid is something else. And those two jerks, you know, they'll never guess, you know, anywhere with the way they're at. And so no wonder.
He was also saying, like, that he wasn't going to go over and help Saitama because he figured, it'd probably be best if he just gives up here because it's a rough business. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah. So it was kind of, I'm not going to help because fuck this job.
It's kind of like, they'll hate you. You don't owe them anything. Why do you do it?
The old school hero thing.
Yeah, because Bang doesn't help really take care of that meteor either.
No, he does nothing. Well, he gives advice.
He does advice, but yeah, he's not as big a jerk as your Metal Knight is. But
actually, at least he showed up to help.
That's true. Yes, at least he showed up, whereas no one else turned up at all.
Yeah, he's not really the hero top here who's equipped to deal with that kind of threat, no? He's more like the unbeatable kung fu master, no? If there was some, like, super villain terrorizing, like, the city, no? He'd be probably, like, fighting one-on-one, but he can't really do the same for, like, a beat. He can't fly, and he can't, like, you know, shoot laser beams out of his hands.
Saitama can't fly. Saitama can't shoot laser beams out of his
hands. Saitama can jump really high since he can fly.
He basically has the original Superman's powers.
Yeah, I mean, like, with a bit more extreme on top of that, sure.
Superman do the super fast side hops. I didn't meet that issue. They go into a bit as well about, like, they mentioned, like, the various threat levels. And I'd seen that they were using those in, like, the opening sequence and all, where it goes like, 3, 2, 1, let's go. And it goes like, Tiger, Demon, Dragon, and God. You know, like, Tiger's, like, you know, Tiger's I kind of most took out the lowest one, but it's still dangerous.
It's a citywide threat or whatever it is.
Yeah, I Demon's like a threat to the greater population. Dragon is, like, you know, a threat to, like, you know, like, you know, a very wide area. And then, like, God is like, man, an apocalyptic scenario that still hope never arrives.
Well. Having read the comic, I've got some bad news for him.
Well, they gotta hit that one at least a couple of times, right? this episode was a lot more, I guess, for lack of a better term, more serious than the last couple of ones. Which isn't a bad thing.
Yeah. Yeah, this is kind of where it starts getting serious. Probably till the end of the anime at this point.
Really? Oh, I'm kind of hoping for more jokiness.
Oh, there were still be jokes. There's still a bunch more weirdos to show up.
Excellent.
And they're coming next week, because we get the little post-credits bit, where we see, you know, some ominous figures walking along the sea floor, and there's like a bunch of big dudes ready to come here and cause some trouble. But we'll have to find out what happens next week, won't we?
Was one of them that crab guy from the thing? Because I thought I saw a crab dude.
Well, yeah, like the they're sea monsters, you know, that's some kind of, like...
I mean the guy who ate too much crab, and then
I think these are actual sea monsters. They're not weirdos.
Crabs are from the sea.
I know, but that guy wasn't a sea monster. He was a guy who turned into a crab for eating too much crab.
Yeah. Oh, this is going to be the sea king. He's got a cape and a crown and everything.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this one. There's a little less jokes in it, like I said, but it's so good looking.
They kind of like dialed back a bit on like, you know, that big set piece of Titanic, like punching the meteor.
Yeah.
But, you know, besides that, it wasn't like going on very heavy on like the special effects.
Yeah, basically anything with Genos and the up to the meteor point. Yeah, you get some good looking stuff there. But
yeah, you get like no bang doing is like no flowing walk, water smashing the fist. Got a bit of cool kind of kung fu moves there, but like what he's doing is like he stands and going, yeah, see that? Oh, hey, where'd you go? He's gone. Okay.
There was a lot of jokes with Bang I did like. It's like, oh my god, you're pushing the meteor back with your laser, really? Oh no, I'm mistaken. I did like that shit where it's just like the fucking old man. there was a couple of good bits with that. So, you're telling me there's more of these tank top guys because this is,
yeah,
this is
like,
excellent news.
There's a whole posse of them.
Yeah, I think they pretty much only show up to get beaten up by people.
Like, well, yeah, that seems to be the case. I gotta say the black hole guy is disappointing compared to, you know, Tiger with all his stripy hair and everything. Because, I mean, like, all he's done is basically wear, you know, black tank top and has black hair. It's like, that's not that interesting, yeah. Dude. You don't have dyed eyebrows that have stripes on them.
The tank topper army. So here we go from One Punch Man Wikia. The leader is the Class S superhero. Tank top master. Then who haven't we met yet? So we've got tank top vegetarian. Tank top rockabilly. Tank top jungle. Tank top al dente. Tank top racer.
I'm not gonna look up these guys, but these names are amazing.
Tank top girl, tank top hatter, tank top swimmer, and tank top mask.
Yeah.
Excellent.
These are just background goons and things just to get punched up.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, like, that's essentially the plot of the show. It's like, what are we gonna do about the meteor? He's gonna punch it.
Yeah, fortunately we don't get introduced, we probably won't get introduced in this anime to the other character who goes around punching things.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, there's always next season.
There is always next season, yes. We just need there to be more of the comic first. That is the only problem.
How did you find this one?
I enjoyed it a lot. I think, like, as you say, all the bits of anime. Again, there's some nice walking animation. Like when he strides out to take on the meteor.
Yeah.
Was another different sort of walking than we'd seen before, but he was, yeah.
It's got swag on it, yeah.
Yeah. He's like much more like, I'm a superhero. I'm going to do my superhero thing rather than his goofy walk away from the other episode.
Well, he was just going to lunch there.
Yes.
It's like, I'm walking to beat up a meteor and I'm walking to go to a bar. It's completely different context.
That was good. That was a good little moment for him, now, just for himself. He did, like, you know, step up when a big threat came along and he took it out. But he didn't do it because for any kind of like greater, like noble thing. He just did it because, hey, this is something that I want to do. Forget all you guys, you know. you should be grateful that I even borrowed the phone to get out of the apartment today to even do it. So.
His initial joke to thing as well was pretty good. It's like, hey, they got called in for the big meeting. Maybe they're going to fire you. It's like kind of a dick move, Saitama. But I like the fact Genos is looking through the Twitter or whatever, or forums, like seeing everyone give out about Saitama. And he's like, ooh, I hope he doesn't read that. Yeah, I wouldn't mind them subtitling that as well. Of course, that'd be a lot to do.
Yeah. But yeah, all good stuff again.
Mm-hmm.
Another good week for anime. So we'll be back.
Is it always?
Well, no, not always. As we'll probably see when we hit January.
Oh.
Anyway, so that ends this week's episode of Let's Go. Be back here next week to hang with the Let's Go gang. In the meantime, check out our regular podcasts at secretofthesailormadness.blogspot.com and dynamitingthebrain.com. Goodbye.